All right. Well, if you've been following along with us either here in the services or by way of the radio or the internet, we have been working our way through the book of Hebrews chapter 11, what we call that great roll call of faith. So far, we have looked at Abel, we've looked at Enoch, we've looked at Noah, we've looked at Abraham, part one, we've looked at Sarah, and each of these we've seen how faith in God moved them to act in ways sometimes it seems beyond human reasoning, and God guided them and led them to do great things in their lives in the eyes of God. Now tonight we are actually returning our attention back to Abraham once again, so we'll call this Abraham part two, if you would. And we're going to be looking at verses 17 through 19. And if you'll notice there, then that would seem as if we skipped some verses between as we look at the looking for heaven and these things between Sarah and Abraham. But we did discuss some of those things there on Sunday morning as we talked about glimpses of heaven. So if you didn't hear that message, we would ask that you get a copy of that to kind of fill in the gap a little bit. So tonight in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17, we're going to read down through verse number 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. Now, the writer of Hebrews focuses more attention on Abraham than anyone else in this chapter. And out of Abraham's life, after his call, he brings out this event. And for good reason, because there is no single event in Abraham's life that required more trust or more faith than what God asked him to do at this moment and time. Now, we know the background story here of Isaac, who was born to Abraham and Sarah in their old age. We understand how he was born that promised child of God, the one who was to inherit the land and inherit the promises that God had made to Abraham. But now, try to put yourself in this position, try to put yourself here as a parent, watching your young child grow up and now being a young man and then being asked of God, now that you're much older yourself, to sacrifice your child. You know what? If I put myself in that position, I honestly admit I don't think I could have done so. Now, notice here that the writer, as he's speaking here in these verses, he speaks of when Abraham offered up Isaac, he speaks as if he actually carried it through. Now, why does he speak that way? Because in Abraham's mind, he carried it through. From the moment that they left until God stopped him there on the mountain, in his eyes, Isaac was dead. He was as good as dead when he left home. Now, there is absolutely no way to look at these three verses without going back to Genesis chapter 22 and seeing how the events of faith are played out in that chapter. So if you would, turn with me back there to Genesis chapter 22. We'll be looking at much of the chapter here this evening. Genesis chapter 22. And we're going to begin reading in verse number 1. Now, as we go to this chapter, it's a well-drawn-in chapter of mine, and it's one that we've visited a few times since I've been pastor here for different reasons. Most of the time when we brought ourselves to this chapter, we've been looking at the prophetic similarities in this chapter here with looking at Jesus Christ. So some of the things that I will say as we go through this chapter will certainly be reviewed for some of you all, but certainly it'll be probably the first time that some will hear it as well, so you all bear with me here. Genesis chapter 22, verse number 1. And it came to pass, after these things, that God did tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here am I. as we look at that word tempt, we always like to bring this out from the very beginning. We understand that the meaning of it is not tempt as in God was tempting Abraham to do some kind of evil. The devil tempts man with evil. God does not tempt man with evil. And that's shown for us in James chapter 1, verse 13. The rendering in Hebrews is actually a little bit better because in Hebrews it says that he was tried. And certainly that's a little bit easier word for us to understand as we look at this. God does test our obedience. He tries our obedience to see if we will follow after his will or whether we'll follow after our own rebellious will or if we'll lean to our own flawed reasoning. Now, this same kind of testing is the same thing as what Noah went through when God said, build an ark. It's the same thing, the same kind of testing that was going on. Perhaps you think it's a lot different, but Noah was asked to do a very large thing that seemed incredible to do. Abraham was asked to do something that seemed incredible to do. Now, verse number 2. It said, and he said, take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. Now let's focus on the first part for just a moment here, as it speaks about thy son, thine only son, Isaac. Over in Hebrews it speaks of him as being the only begotten son. Reminds me of another only begotten son. But, we talked briefly last week when we were going through Hebrews and talking about Sarah, that we spoke about the birth of Ishmael. Now, we understand Ishmael was not the legitimate son. He was the son of a bondwoman. He was not the son of Abraham's wife. There was only one promised seed. And that promised seed was to be born not just of Abraham, but that promised seed was to be born of Sarah as well. We often speak about Abraham and how he was chosen, but Sarah was chosen as well. We understand Ishmael was born before him, and of course after Isaac was born, and after Sarah died, Abraham remarried, Abraham went on to have more children, but they were not heirs to the promise as well. Only Isaac was heir to the promise, and that was because he was the son both of Abraham and of Sarah. Now, God tells them to go up into the land of Moriah. Now, there's a significance there that you just don't gloss over because right now, Abraham is living in Beersheba. That's about 50 miles away from Moriah. Building an altar in Beersheba would not do. It would not do at all. God told him to go. And he would go wherever that God would tell him to go. But here, this point, this place in Moriah was a place that was chosen by God. It was not a haphazard location that he just walked up to and that was it. God said it was a place that he would show him. It was a place that was chosen before the foundation of the world, foreordained for this very purpose, this very moment, in what God was directing Abraham to. And we understand as we look at God and the way He works, that there is nothing haphazard in the way that God works. Everything that God does is for a purpose. Every little event, seemingly little event in our eyes, is for the working of His purpose. And you know what? Sometimes it may seem as if those little events, they never play out in our lives necessarily, but He may be working it out for lives to come. It may be our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren or even our children that God is working out these things and these purposes. And such is the case here. God has a place appointed, and it's because there's a future for there in Mount Moriah. Now, Moriah is a series of hills. Today, we call Moriah, not Moriah, we call it Jerusalem. This was the city of where Jerusalem would be. Now, the temple of that Solomon built here was placed upon these very hills. And of course, the second temple was as well. Now, many Jews believe that the Holy of Holies was directly over the spot where Abraham built his altar. Some Jews also believe that this was the original spot of the Garden of Eden. Now, if you read Scripture, that doesn't seem to make sense as you look at the flowing of the Tigris and the Euphrates and things like that. But I did want to let you know that that's what they believe. Now, one thing is for sure, that today if you go to Jerusalem, if you go up into this area, you will not be in Jewish territory. You'll be in a territory controlled by the Muslims, and over that spot you'll find a mosque called the Dome of the Rock, a very holy site for the Muslim people. Now, since the spot spoken of here could have been anywhere in those mountain range, a lot of Christian writers over time have said that this is a spot of Golgotha, there where Jesus Christ was crucified. Now, I'll show you a little bit later on why people would believe that. But I want you to know that either one of those situations could be right. And both of those could be wrong. Absolutely, we understand that. But again, there is a significance. There is a significance to the fact that God told him to go to Moriah. Moriah later becomes Jerusalem. And God showed him the spot where to sacrifice. And now that was done haphazard. So we believe God had a purpose in that. Verse number 3 says, "And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went to the place of which God had told him." Now at the end of verse 2, God told Abraham what he was going to have to do with Isaac. Now, if God had told you that, you might put it off as long as possible. I believe I probably would. I don't think I'd have got up early in the morning and started out on the track. I would have stuck around the house a few more days and tried to tarry it around in my brain a little bit if that's really what God meant for me to do. But Abraham had learned by this time in his life that when God said to go, it was time to go, and when God said to stay, it was time to stay. So he wasted no time the very next morning gathering up wood for the sacrifice, getting a couple servants to go along with him, and taking his son on the trip. Verse number 4. It says, "Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off." Now, Abraham, as we look here, he didn't draw the trip out either. You know, he didn't take a long time to leave, and when he got on the trip, he didn't take a long time in getting there. He made this 50-mile track in 3 days. Now, that's pretty good progress back in these days when you traveled either by foot or by camel or something like that. Now, if it was me, again, what would you have done? Your natural tendency as a father who was on this mission might be to stop and to stop and to stop and to find every reason in the world to stop. Now, try to put yourself in Abraham's mind as you're here on this journey. Do you think that Abraham was laughing? Do you think that he was joking? I don't think so. I think Abraham was probably a very solemn man upon this journey. I think that he was probably praying to God for guidance and strength to do what he was asked to do. And as I said earlier, I believe that when they left the house, in his mind, Isaac was as good as dead. I really do. Now, and when I speak of Isaac as being a child, by the way, I want you to understand that by this time, he's not some young boy. He's not like 14 or 15 years old. He's much older than that. Some estimate that he was even in his early 30s at this point in time. Now, but Abraham had faith. He had faith in God that everything was going to work out and that if he didn't bring home Isaac alive, that he was going to bring him home resurrected. That's what the writer of Hebrews tells us, that he had faith that God would raise him from the dead. Now, look in verse 5. "And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you." Now that statement is very emphatic. He tells the servants, "I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you." Abraham, without a doubt, knew that he was coming back with Isaac. Again, he may have thought he was coming back with an Isaac that had been resurrected, but he knew that he was coming back again. Now, how did he know that? Because of faith. That's the only reason he had. He had faith in what God had told him in all his life. And that is that his promised child will be heir to those promises. So he had to trust God. Verse number 6. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac, his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife. And they went both of them together. You know, as I go through this chapter and I read these things, so many things point us to Christ and how Christ was crucified and, you know, up here on these very hills. Wherever it was at, but it was close to this point at least, we know that. So, but you notice Isaac here is carrying the burden of the wood that's laid upon him. And all I can think of as I read that is a picture of Christ there, him carrying his cross there that faithful day that he was crucified. Again, Abraham, he takes the fire in his hand, which always speaks of judgment in the Scripture. The other hand, he carried a knife, which always speaks of sacrifice. There's a lot of symbolism here in this chapter, and truly, as I said earlier, you know, we've looked at this chapter before, we've looked at it in a prophetic sense, and I'm trying to stick to the faith of Abraham here, but it's hard to when you see some of these things. As you look at it, especially as we look at it and see how it symbolizes our Christ. Verse number 7. And Isaac spake unto Abraham, his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold, the fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? You know what? Isaac didn't know what was going to happen when he left home. He had no idea. Undoubtedly, you know, this isn't the first sacrifice trip that he's ever been on in life. He's probably done this more than once in his life. So he sees the wood. His dad's been carrying the knife. He sees the fire. But the most major ingredient is missing. And that is the lamb or the ram or whatever it is that they be lifting up. And you know, all I can think of is Abraham over these 3 days was probably just very mournful looking. Already mourning over his son. Probably very silent. Then he goes up on this hill. They've tracked 50 miles to make this sacrifice. They're going up this hill. They've got all of these things. And Isaac's looking around and he doesn't see what they're going to make the sacrifice with. So he's probably beginning to think that something's wrong with Dad. Something's wrong with this picture. Something's not quite right. Verse number 8. And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. One way or the other, Abraham knew that God would do what was right upon this mountain because he had faith. Faith that stood against the logic of man. Verse number 9. And they came to the place which God had told them of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Now, let's be honest. If we'd made it this far into the journey, if you've made it this far, would you have made it any further? Could you have done what he's doing right now? You can see the tears in Abraham's eyes. You can see his mind crying out to God. I can't even imagine the binding of his son. And you know, I think as we look at this, this speaks of the faith of Isaac as well. Because as I said, Isaac wasn't a young man. And I don't think Abraham clubbed him on the head and knocked him out. Abraham was an old man, and Isaac was not. You know, the moment that Isaac heard what was going to happen upon this hill, if you were Isaac, what would you have done? You'd have hightailed it down the hill. But you know what? Isaac come to trust his father. And Isaac had come to trust God completely. And he laid down in faith. Faith that God would raise him again. Same thing Jesus did, folks. By faith, he laid his life down for us. Now, verse number 10. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. This is the final moment. And what horror would go through your head at this point in time, and what doubt must have been there, seemingly, but there wasn't. There was no doubt in his mind. Abraham had followed through completely. Abraham took the knife up. He began to lower it down. Could you have done it? Again, I say I couldn't. I don't think that I could. You know, I don't like it when my kids fall down and get a scratch or a bruise. Hurt knee or hurt elbow or whatever it might be. To do this just seems so far beyond me. But Abraham was fully determined to do everything that God asked him to do. As the epistle of James says, Abraham is showing his faith by his works. Verse number 11, And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. The angel of the Lord, I believe. Here was the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. If you go back into Abraham's life, you find that here upon this mountain, this is the seventh time in Abraham's life that God has revealed Himself to Abraham in one way or another. Seven in the Word of God is always speaking of a number of completion. This is the last time that we have recorded that God reveals Himself in a very special way to Abraham. No longer will God ask him to do what seems to be impossible. You know, that's the very first thing God did with Abraham, right? When he called him out of the land and away from his family and to do all of these things. When God first called him, he asked him something that seemed to be impossible and beyond human reasoning from the very beginning. But here, no longer God will ask him to do what seems impossible or unethical anymore. Abraham was put to the test by God, and Abraham passed. Verse number 12, it says, And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing that thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. His faith has been tested, and he shows that he fears God more than man. He trusts in God more than he does the reasoning of man. And in this, he leaned not towards his own understanding, but solely followed after the will of the Lord and trusted the promises of God. Now, before we read on any further in the chapter, I want us to consider for a moment the faithfulness of God as well. You see, and as I've told you, you know, I'm trying to focus on the faith of Abraham, but there's some things it's hard to say. You see, in all of this, we have a picture of Christ. You know, He was the Lamb that God would ultimately provide. As Abraham said from the very beginning, God will provide. But you know what? What if at that moment, as Jesus Christ was suspended on the cross between heaven and earth, what if in that moment he'd say, God anyway, would have said, No, I can't do this. Not my son. What if he had withdrawn the death blow? Then you know what? For one thing, we wouldn't be meeting here tonight, because there wouldn't be a such thing as the Lord's church, and we would all be destined for hell. For there's no other way. There's no other way to see God, to see heaven, than through that cross that Jesus Christ died upon. Now, consider another lesson for us too. Up to this point, when it comes to trusting God and where our unwavering faith lies. You see, this tells us in this chapter that our faith and our willingness to serve God in our faith should be much stronger than any other bond that we have in our lives. Isaac was precious in the eyes of Abraham, precious in the eyes of Sarah. But you know what? Isaac wasn't more precious than the Word of God. Matthew 10:37 reminds us that one who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Now you could put your children in there. You could put any other relationship in there. You see, there is no other relationship that should be any stronger in life than that of our relationship with God. Now, we're to love our families. And we're to love our families dearly. But you know what? We're not to let our families come between us and God. We must put our faith and trust in Him first. Verse number 13. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. Long before Abraham ever ascended this mountain of God, God had already provided for this ram to be there at the right time, at the right moment, to be a substitute. God provided a sacrifice just as Abraham said. Verse number 14. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day, in the mouth of the Lord it shall be seen. Now, the name mentioned here is a title that's given to God as well. It means Jehovah will provide, or God will provide. And I think that as we look into the names of God, this is certainly one of the most comforting names that I know of for God. You see, I know by faith tonight that God is going to provide for me in my life. We think of this great incident of faith and what was necessary here of Abraham to trust God to provide a sacrifice. But you know what? When we look at Abraham and what he did here and putting his faith in God and God providing, it should make it a whole lot easier for us to trust in that same God who says that He will provide for us and whose name, Jehovah Jireh, means that He will provide for whatever it is that we need. You know what the problem is in our lives most of the time? Is we think that it's we ourselves who do all the providing. We think it's because we go to work and we labor for things and we make money that it's all us. But we forget in the first place that it is God who gives us the health to get up and go to work. It is God who gives us the ability to be able to do the work and to excel at work, to excel at school, or whatever it might be. It is God who provides all of those things, all of those opportunities for us. It's all of Him. Let's read on a bit further. Verse 15. It says, And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of the heaven the second time and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son. I want you to notice something there about the angel of the Lord. You notice that he speaks the words of God. He says, by myself I've sworn. God can swear by himself. That's the only thing he can swear by. But the angel of the Lord speaks with the words of God. Why? Because the angel of the Lord is God. Jesus is God. Verse 17, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. Now as you look at here, these verses, they're verses that's been repeated to Abraham. This is the reward of Abraham's faith. Again, remember earlier as we were looking in Hebrews in chapter 11, we saw in verse 6 and we learned that God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Abraham sought God diligently throughout his life. Now, didn't mean that he never stumbled. Didn't mean that he never failed. But one thing is for sure, when we look into the life of Abraham, we see the older he gets, the less and less those lapses of faith are. He gets stronger and stronger in his faith. It builds and it builds and it builds. And that should be a lesson to us as well. You know how he was learning? You know how those lapses of faith got less and less? Because God tested him. God tested him, God tried him, and God molded him. You go a little bit further down the road, a little lapse in faith, God tested, God tried, God molded. What? To turn him into the image that he needed to be. Conform him even to the image of his own son. And that's certainly what God does with us in our own lives as well. Does God still test? Absolutely. He certainly does. God will still test us. God will still try us. But you know what? God will never tempt us. That is for sure tonight as well. God will never tempt us with evil. So whenever you see any evil presented to you in life, don't ever think that it's of God. That is certainly of the devil. Now, we're going to go ahead and end here tonight. Maybe a little shorter than what we normally do. But that's where we're going to end at tonight. Next week, we're going to be looking into Isaac. And we may even go just a little bit further in the chapter next week. I haven't decided as well. So, Randy, if you'll come and listen.